listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Bill Whitaker and Tommy Alquist. Bill is the former CEO of the J.R. Simplot Company and is now a full-time adventure seeker and philanthropist. Tommy is the CEO of BVA Development, co-founder of Crush the Curve Idaho, and most importantly, a full-time grandfather. Each episode focuses on sharing the stories of individuals who are changing the world.
Welcome to another episode of Inspire Excellence. We are really, really excited today to have the president of Boise State University, Dr. Marlene Tromp, on with us today. I want to give an excuse and wish him our best, but my co-host, Bill Whitaker, could not be here with us today. As you know, Bill spends most of his time traveling this great world, doing amazing things with travel, and he's just out of town today and was traveling. But he sends his best, Dr. Tromp, and will certainly be the first listener when we get done here. So welcome aboard to the podcast. We're looking forward to this time we spend together.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here.
Well, hey, the one thing I want to start with, I didn't want to bring this up, but it's just too near and dear to my heart. But last night, that basketball game, oh my gosh, President, it killed me. Oh, we just had that thing, and last night I couldn't even sleep thinking about it. But hey, it's been an amazing season, and maybe we start there. I just think the role of the university for me. I remember going through the last recession. And it was right when the university was doing so many wonderful things on the football field and growing so much. And really, during that recession, provided that spark of hope for us as a community. And then I think in a lot of ways, Dr. Tromp, this, you know, COVID, everything going on, what a great, I know it's been hard for you to pull everything together, but to be able to cheer as fans, the football team and the other sports teams, and now basketball, even if we only got to see a little bit, the role of the university providing hope and some sense of normalcy out there has been wonderful. So thank you for that. And any comments on how it's been to kind of navigate that this last 6 months?
You know, it's been really quite incredible. And let me say a word about our athletics programs, first of all. I think one of the functions of athletics that a lot of people don't consider is something, Tommy, that you just described, which is that university athletics give people something from all different parts of the community, all different parts of the university to have in common and to cheer for. And there are so many things that divide us right now as a nation, as people. And this is something that can really unite us. When we watch the Broncos do that Statue of Liberty play at the Fiesta Bowl, when we watch Derek Alston make an amazing shot from midcourt, for basketball. We're all proud together, and we all are proud as Idahoans, and we're proud of this university that's grown up from a small community college to this, national force. And athletics is really emblematic of that. So what's been happening in athletics is what's happened, all across the university with academics and in so many arenas. And we're so proud that in this time when half the universities in the country chose to stay closed, that Boise State really made the effort, along with the other institutions in the state of Idaho, to open our doors, make sure our students still had the opportunity to have a face-to-face experience, but to do so safely. And often our COVID positive rate on campus was 1/3 to 1/15 of what the surrounding community was. And so we're very proud of our public health office. We were proud that we got our students back in class and on campus. And we're proud for the ways in which that kind of innovation is really what characterizes Boise State University.
Well, I can't thank you enough for your leadership during this, because it's not been easy, right? None of it's been easy. This pandemic didn't come with a playbook. And each state is so different in how it's funded and the protocols. And I mean, even within our state, the different counties and cities, and there's just so many considerations. And it's been really fun for me. And I consider myself kind of on the inside of that with Crush the Curve, to watch you navigate those waters with such communication and grace as you did it. It's a real example. It's a success story out there for us, and I appreciate your leadership. And that leadership did come from the top. I can tell you from my perspective, as I watched the university decide how to navigate this, that it was you that led. And it's refreshing. I think people like to be led. That's one of my things I always say. And it's nice to have a leader that steps out and says, no, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to make it work. One other comment, you know, I know getting into basketball games was a big deal, but that first game a couple weeks ago that we got to go to, just the protocols and the professionalism and every single thing else as you went in, I'm just so proud of our university here. Just so proud. And I wish we would have won last night. But other than that, I'm just really, really proud. And then one other thing, before we get on to some other great things you're doing, I don't want to let this dominate the sports thing, but I do think for a metropolitan area like we have, and for a state we have, Boise State is such an integral part of society because of its sports and athletics, and it just is. And so for folks like me, it's just part of our life. And I got to tell you this, Dr. Trump, Andy Avalos, Coach Avalos, is one of my favorite human beings on the planet. I mean, I've been able to meet him multiple times now since he's been selected as the new head coach. I don't know if I've ever met a more authentic or genuine guy. I'm not playing for him, but I'll run through a brick wall for him. He is an unbelievable guy. And then Jeremiah Dickey, the new athletic director. These are Grand Slam hires, and they're Grand Slam people, and I just, anyway, so congratulations on that. You had to do it very quickly. I know it was a lot of transition, but any comments on that?
Oh, sure. You know, I think when Brian Harsin made the decision to go to Auburn, and we wish him well, of course. He gave a lot of his life to Boise and to Boise State, and we're proud of him and grateful for all that he gave to the university. But when he made a decision to go, you know, we took a lot of heat, like hire a football coach immediately. Don't wait to hire the AD. And we knew that the right thing to do, and I knew that the right thing to do, was to ensure that we had that AD in place so the AD could be a part of that search. And Jeremiah really was the right person for that job. He's the right person for Boise State, for Idaho, for Bronco Athletics. And he's smart. He's thoughtful. He has great experience. He has a great vision for the university and for Bronco Athletics. And I knew I could trust him to be a heavy hitter in helping us hire an excellent football coach. And he did such a bang up job. And he and I were convinced that Andy was the right partner for Jeremiah and for me to really lead the Broncos forward. And so, you know, we did do that quick. I asked a lot of people, and it does require a team. All the public health practices you mentioned in Extra Mile Arena, as our public health staff and our Extra Mile Arena staff, and the leaders who oversee those areas, the VPs who oversee those areas. I just have this amazing team of people who are working really, really hard to achieve these kinds of incredible outcomes. And we're going to see the same thing from Jeremiah and Andy in athletics.
Yeah, I love it. I'm giddy. I mean, I've never had this much energy, I'm so excited for our future. And thank you for doing, again, leadership. Watching you lead through that has been really just a pleasure to do. So, hey, I've taken up way too much time talking sports because I can sit here and talk that all day. But what I really want to get into, Dr. Trump, is, you know, our business community surrounds the university. It's part of our downtown. It's part of, and I've been fortunate in my career to work closely with your computer science department, other departments over the years. It's just so integral to what we do here. That talent pipeline of these kids coming in and getting degrees and connecting, you know, Idaho kids and other kids to businesses. I wanted to give you a chance today to talk about all the great things you're doing and just kind of let the people know that listen to this, that are a lot of business leaders in our community. How is the university doing, and how are they integrated, and how can we help?
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a great question, and it makes me so excited to talk about this. We will have, in this May, we will achieve over 100,000 living graduates. And the vast majority of those people live and work in the Treasure Valley. We'll graduate close to 5,000 students this May. and we serve 33,000 students annually. And this is really quite tremendous. While universities all over the country are seeing declines in enrollment, Boise State has seen a 26% increase since 2012. And we confirm more than half of all bachelor's degrees from public institutions in Idaho, in the entire state, and that's any kind of post-high school education. Tech schools, community colleges, universities, that's half come from Boise State. And we are so proud to be partnering with industry and with our business leaders across the state to ensure that the degrees we're delivering are meaningful for them, that we're learning from our partners. Our Dean of Engineering works with businesses that hire engineers. Our College of Health Sciences works with our healthcare system. Our College of Business works with our business leaders so that we're producing the kinds of students that can really go out there and make an impact. And what I always say about higher education is it gives people the opportunity to change their lives so they can change the world. And we want Idaho young people and adults to have the opportunity to seize this education and to make their dreams come true. And that's exactly what we watch them go on to do.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What are some of the things that are happening in some of those departments connecting to our community right now? I have a few to ask you about, but what comes to the top of your mind when you hear that question?
Well, there are a couple things I'd like to mention. Our Venture College and our College of Business collaborate to support businesses, and we just went through this incredibly difficult year and a half where people have been struggling to figure out, you know, how do they make their business, how do they help their business continue to thrive during this time? And that partnership meant we were there for small businesses, and we were having our students work with and learn from those businesses. So there was a lot of integration even throughout this crisis period to support our local businesses, because that's a part of what a university does, is serve. And also to learn from those businesses. What do you need now? How are your needs changing? But we also have another series of programs where, you know, in virtually every area of the university, we're reaching out. So I'll give it a couple of other specific examples. I came to my leadership team and I said, okay, so this was last spring when high school students all over the country were pulled out of their schools, lost connection to their guidance counselors, to their teachers, their mentors. And I went to my leadership team and I said, okay, we've got a problem. In the state of Idaho, where we had the lowest go-on rate in the country, now those people have severed their contact with their high schools. How do we help them stay connected, especially if for some reason now they have to stay home for an extra semester or year, or their family has special financial needs because maybe mom or dad has lost income or lost a job during the pandemic? And so my brilliant deans came back to me with the Bronco Gap Year Plan. And we built an extremely low-cost program. For less than $1,200, a student anywhere in the state could sign up to work directly with a faculty mentor and get that kind of support and guidance and mentorship and take up to 12 hours for $1,200. And they could do it from wherever they were. That is a solution to a real problem. And what we found, and this is what was really exciting to me, we thought that would help those transitioning high school students. We had sophomores and juniors here at Boise State who were saying, hey, I got to go home and help my family now because this has been a hard year for us. And those folks utilized that program as well. But we're really proud of the way that we adapted in the crisis, that we learned from it. And now we'll keep that program on the books for the future. So what we learned during the crisis, we're going to employ for the future going forward.
You know what I love about that story? I just love it. Is when this COVID crisis was happening, and I know what we did with our team here, we kind of pulled away and said, hey, okay, what are we going to do now to be better, right? How are we going to take advantage of this disruption and come out of it better? And you can't fake that. You just can't fake leadership. And so I was hoping you would bring that up because I think it's one of the best stories to be told, because there was a lot of people that were paralyzed by fear and, okay, what's going to happen? And if we try something that doesn't work, how's that going to look? And how do we know? And you never know how things are going to go all the time. You have a pretty good idea. You surround yourself with good folks and you try to do your best. But president. Congratulations. I mean, that look at what came out of that. And I will tell you even more than that. I think it's going to be one of the most significant things going forward that this state will have, was what you learned and what you did during this pandemic. And congratulations for what you've done. Another thing that I wanted to hit on, just a real personal thing. We have a daughter that's a senior at Eagle High School this year that's applied to BSU and was accepted. But the amount of touch points and connection since she was accepted has been incredible. And in fact, just this morning, I'm opening my mail and there's a letter from a parent, a handwritten letter from another BSU student's parent telling me, hey, your daughter was accepted. Let me tell you what my experience has been like at BSU. Now, there's times I'm surprised, but I was shocked. I was blown away. I'm like, what the heck? This is like one of the coolest things ever. Tell me about that program, just because it's so personal today.
Well, and I'll tell you that what we really have tried to build, and this is our VP who oversees this area, and you're going to hear about all my amazing VPs today, but what we really try to build is outreach that tells that student that that individual student is special and important. And we care about that student's connectedness to the university, which means we have to care about that student's connections. So we have to care about that student's whole family. And what's exciting to me is that as we move forward, as we grow as a university, we're not reducing that amount of connection. We're actually increasing it in ways that it didn't exist before. And that's something to be really proud of.
Well, it was an amazing thing. And I just thought, wow, this is convenient that it came today, right before I'm meeting with you. But I think it does. I think it speaks volumes to what kind of a university and programs you're running now. And it probably speaks volumes to your leadership team that's right underneath you. For a lot of people listening to this podcast, we talk a lot about it, but I'm going to ask you the question. How important is that team? When you build a business or a university or a department, or wherever you are in the process of starting, or you come into you came into a situation where I'm sure you came in and you had a lot of existing leaders, but you build that team around you. Talk us through your mindset as you evaluate people and what you're looking for, and what your formula for building a successful team has been in the past, and what we might learn from you.
Thank you so much for that question. I'll tell you that I really did come to a place with a lot of amazing people. But Dr. Kustra, who was a brilliant leader and did amazing things for Boise State during the time that he was here, it has a very different leadership style than I do. And so part of what I had to do was really make clear to people that what I'm going to do is give you a direction and expect you to run with it. And if you run into obstacles, if either you find your way around, over, through, or you bring me back some possible ways to respond. So here are the things I'm thinking. What's most consistent with where you need to head? And I really want people to be those self-starters and those innovators. And I want them to look for creative solutions. I want them to ask the tough questions, to be in the meeting and to say, wait a minute, maybe that's not going to work. What if we tried this? I really want people who are going to engage in those ways. And I think that the more rich conversation we have as a leadership team, the better the decisions are that we're going to make. And we're learning as we go along. We're in a different environment. Universities are in a different environment than we were in 5 years ago. There's a different political climate for universities. There's a different intellectual climate. There's a different economic climate for universities. We cannot do the things we were doing before. So people really have to be ready. And one of the things that I've been, that made me want to come here is the openness to innovation and change here. And that made me excited about this leadership team and the folks that I have chosen to work with here. And I've hired quite a few new folks since I've come too. But part of what my aim was to think about how we could throw out the old models, benefit from them where we can, but keep innovating. How can we as an organization just keep rethinking how the model of higher ed works? And I'll give you another specific example from the pandemic. And I said, Tommy, the exact same thing that you said to your team. I said, we're going to figure out, this looks like it's going to be the worst hardship we're facing. We're going to figure out how we become a better university on the other side of it. And one of the other things that we did is we recognized that if we were going to have people who were isolated or quarantined, or we were going to have young people who had to miss class, or folks who needed more flexibility because of challenges that they were facing. We wanted to create an environment where more of our classrooms made it possible for someone to be away and still engage in the class. So what we have now is a more of our classrooms where a student can, for example, you have to go home to help with the harvest, and you're going to be gone for 2 weeks. And maybe what those 2 weeks would have meant for you in the past is you had to not take school that semester, or you had to take a lower load of classes and make lots of arrangements. Well, what if now you go home, you get on your computer for the hour that you're in class, but you're out there helping your family with the harvest during the rest of those hours? That changes what's possible for the young people in our state. And so innovations that were responsive to COVID are going to be innovations that make us a more flexible university going forward.
Oh, I love that. What great words of wisdom. That's fantastic. What about you personally? As the leader of a university, just the physical demands, the mental demands, staying sharp, any advice for our entrepreneurs or leaders out there? That what are the things that Dr. Trump does to stay sharp and stay your best?
You know, I have a lot of folks ask me about this. I'm very energetic, and they say, "Gosh, where do you get your energy?" And a lot of it is I physical fitness is really important to me, so I'm really active, and I also meditate every day. So I want to take some time to meditate and do some yoga, really to center and be reflective. Because I think one of the things that we can do with all the information and all the data that we have right now, we can just swim in that sea, and you can surf, you know, from the beginning of the day to the end of the day and never capture everything that's out there. I mean, it's an endless supply of information. And so for me, a workout and some reflective time through like meditation and through something like yoga offers me the opportunity to really think about where are we headed, what's important, what do I need to accomplish today, what are the big issues that are facing us, and how are we going to address them. And so I derive a lot of energy from that. And one of the things that really feeds me is getting a chance to talk to groups of people and tell them how important their gifts are and how important it is for them to develop their gifts. So in some ways this year has been hard for me because I couldn't stand up in front of a big crowd of students and tell them how amazing they were and how lucky we were that they were coming to school to develop those talents. And so I've had to look for other ways to refuel. And I think those two things, being able to know what you need to refuel and being able to know how you need to really what it takes for you to really gather your thoughts.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I knew, you know, I talk a lot probably to people that it's all balance is not the right word. It's something different than that. I think it's priorities. We had a prior podcast where one of our guests said that. It's like, I gave up on balance. I prioritize things correctly in my life. And if I keep it that way, then I always stay balanced. Balance is a product of priorities. I thought that was good. And I love what you said about mental health and just giving yourself that time, right? I mean, in a world that's so noisy and so many devices and we're always just being bombarded, having that time to reflect and contemplate, you know, what's your vision and why and where are my blind spots and how am I going to get there and what's the plan? And because as the leader, they're going to look to you for that. Where am I headed and why? And do you really connect with me? And the other thing that you just said, I really want folks to maybe hear, I'll say it again, is it's interesting to me. It's got to be a little bit hard because I've been around you enough to watch the way you engage with students and to watch the authentic joy you get out of leading them and helping them with their lives. And, you know, I get asked a lot of times by people, hey, what's the formula for success? How do I find my path in life? And how do I find joy and happiness and the abundant life? And for me, it's an easy answer, which is find something you love to do, but then find a way to give to others, because you'll find that most of your happiness in life will come as you help others and you lift others and you feel like I'm really making an impact on another human being's life. And so I love the fact that the first thing you went to was the reason you're a university president and you're in higher education is because it's that connection and that giving to others that really gives you that energy. So I just wanted to tell you, I've seen it. I felt that it's authentic and it's why you'll be a great president of the university. So that's awesome. I'm going to ask you, I didn't know I was going to go there, but I know your mom is still with you and you care for her. So a couple of questions, maybe a little personal. It's been a rough year for everyone I know in my life, including me and my wife with our parents. It's been a concerning year because no matter what your opinion is on COVID, the virus, and there's lots of opinions out there, the one thing that very, very few, even some people that don't believe it's real, would say is that it does really, you know, if you look at what's happened to our elder population, it's just been devastating. And so how's that been in the middle of being the university president, dealing with all that you're dealing with? And then I believe she lives with you, right? I mean, talk to us about this because this is a big deal.
So my mom is 92. She'll be 93 this year. She is the sweetest human being I have ever known in all my life. And people say to me sometimes, oh my gosh, how can you live with your mom? Well, if they had a mom like I do, they would be happy to live with her. She is absolutely wonderful. I admire her so much and I'm so grateful to her. And so early on during the pandemic, my mother called me into her room and she had been watching the news and she's sharp and physically fit. And she said to me, Marlene, I'm 92 years old. I know I won't live forever, but I do not want to die in a hospital room all by myself. I don't want to be alone. And if getting this illness would require me to be isolated and by myself, that's not okay with me. So I need you to do everything you can to keep me healthy. So I took that charge very, very seriously. And that meant, I did a lot of meetings remotely this year, but it meant that when I did go out, I was exceedingly careful. And I am so happy to tell you that she was able to get her first shot a couple of weeks ago. And now, you know, for me, that's this huge sigh of relief because what that means is I was very circumscribed and that meant I lost contact with a lot of people I wanted to be able to see in person, folks whose hands I wanted to shake. And I'll be able to do that again now soon. And I'm just so looking forward to that. And I have a 19-year-old son. And my son couldn't get a job. He couldn't go to school because the risk of him contracting the virus and maybe even being totally asymptomatic, so he wouldn't even be aware that he had it, and communicating that virus to my mother, which could have been fatal for her, meant that he was stuck at home too. So just recently, as things began, as the vaccine rollout began, we got him a little place in town, and now he's looking for a job, and he's so excited because he feels like he can finally get the chance to move on. And I'm really excited to imagine the possibility of having a stadium full of people and an auditorium full of people and them getting to experience what it means to bleed blue and feel like Broncos and you know, dance together and sing and chant together and go to games and be in classes where they're all laughing together. And we've learned so many things about how we can help people access their education and access services and access resources electronically. We'll keep all those things. But when folks want to be able to get those things now, they'll be able to get them. And I am so excited that my mom is going to be safe because Jacob has told her he expects her to be at his college graduation.
Wow, what a story. I'm just sitting here thinking for your son, though, through his lifetime, one, that was a sacrifice. I mean, there's just no doubt. But describe his relationship with your mom.
You know, he has been so lucky to grow up in a 3-generation household. How many kids, you know, get to grow up with their grandmother in the same house? And his whole life, you know, she's been with us. And so he's a very, very fortunate young man. And I think there are probably ways in which he won't fully understand that until he's older. You know, he takes it for granted in some ways now. And my mom is Finnish American, and she grew up in a family that spoke Finnish at home. And my son has perfect Finn pronunciation, and Finn is supposed to be one of the most difficult languages to learn in the world, you know, and his pronunciation is just pitch perfect. And it's because he grew up getting to hear Finn all the time, just like I did, you know, and I think that's a gift that will last him for the rest of his life. And he got to learn what it was like to have not just a mother's love, but a grandmother's love every day too.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, my hero in my life is my grandpa. He just is. That's who I think of. And my grandma, his wife. And it's what a special relationship. I'm happy for him. I know it's probably somewhat of a sacrifice, but he'll remember this the rest of his life. Just another side note, my son served his mission in Finland. So I know how hard that language is to learn. He used to tell me, Dad, it's not a language. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, the only way I could learn it is I had to think in math. And I'm like, what do you mean think in math? And I still don't know what that means, President. I have no idea what that means. But he's like, I just had to think in equations and math, because if I thought in traditional language, I could never learn it. Anyway, he ended up learning it. But what a great heritage. That's fantastic. Hey, this is an impossible question, and I know it is, but because there's probably a whole list, but what's one lesson you've learned from your mom? I mean, if I said, hey, I don't know if it's the most important, it's probably just the one that comes to your mind the quickest, but what's the most important lesson she's taught you?
Oh, that's so easy. In fact, it's getting me choked up to have you ask it, because it's the greatest gift that she has given me is that she sees true value in every human being she encounters. And my mom is this extraordinary embodiment of love. And she loves people. She wants people to thrive. And that was a gift she gave me. My dad gave me the curiosity and the passion for learning and the passion to know more and a drive. And my mom gave me this incredible commitment to people. And you said earlier something about me wanting to serve the students. And I'll tell you that I was very happy as a professor, very happy doing my research and teaching. I loved teaching. I had somebody ask me what made me an administrator. I was getting called into administrative roles all the time. And when the time came for me to make a choice about whether I wanted to be a full-time administrator or not, the question that finally swung me over into administration was someone saying to me, do you want to be able to serve hundreds of people or tens of thousands of people? And really, that's my mother's lesson, is that if I can serve tens of thousands of people, that's the greatest gift to me, and it's the greatest use of my gifts in the world.
That's beautiful. That's an amazing lesson, and thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Well, we're almost out of time here, so I'll probably just one more question. And I think this is an easy one, but I'm really excited to hear what you say. There are a lot of people who love this university, and we are so thrilled to have you as our president. And we are cheering for everyone, from the gymnastics team, who I know is doing awesome, to the basketball team, you know, they'll be down in Vegas this week, to the football team and Coach Avalos. But for us average folks out here that love the university, what are the things that we can do to help you? How can we be of service to the university?
Oh, thank you so much for asking that. I appreciate that so much. Speak up. Because right now there are a lot of people who are saying, well, what good are universities? Maybe universities are more trouble than they are good. But we actually know, as Scott Green, the president of U of I, says all the time, university education makes people healthier, wealthier, and wiser. And that we know that unequivocally, that it has so many positive outcomes on people's lives. And folks who love the university need to say so, because when we're in a climate where people are questioning the the value of higher education overall. Having folks speak up really helps send that message that what we're doing matters to them, and what we're doing matters to the state.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. So for anyone listening out there, share that, because I do know, I mean, listen, saying that higher education doesn't have the value it should would be the least crazy thing to come out of the legislature this session. So it's been a wild ride, and there are people that do crazy stuff and say crazy stuff every day, but what we need as a community, and unfortunately, this is my belief, and I'll probably just say it, but there's just such a small minority with a bullhorn that they just say stuff. And then you got the majority, the silent majority, that really does appreciate and love all that happens. And then I'll just say, for me, on a personal note, I will go to my grave talking about the influence of Boise State University on this community through my lifetime, because it carried us during a recession. It led us as businesses were coming out. It was there to reach out and collaborate and lift people and businesses and a community. And my goodness, it's what a wonderful legacy to be part of. And I'm just so happy that we have you here to help lead us through this. And congratulations on the brand that you're developing, because you're making great decisions. I love the results that are coming already, and the choices you're making, and how you lead, and your style. And I think it speaks volumes of who you are and how you're going to lead. And we just can't be happier. We're your biggest fans. And thank you so much for coming on our Inspire Excellence podcast, because I guarantee everyone who listened to this today was inspired, President. Thank you so much. And we look forward to following you and talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to our listeners for listening to Inspire Excellence. Go out and find a way to inspire or lift someone today, and we'll join you next time.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast. We hope you've heard something today that will inspire you to make a difference in the world. Join us again for our next episode.